Well, everybody who was at campus had a couple of days to rest now, and not enough, huh? I was telling Regina, I was looking at Facebook yesterday. Occasionally, I'll get on there and do that on my phone now, that I can do it on my phone. And some friends of mine from Atlanta, they put a picture on Facebook of their family in their living room, and pretty much everybody was zoned out. I mean, everybody was asleep. You know, somebody was in this chair over here with their head back. Somebody was on the floor over here. Somebody was over here kind of half awake doing something. Anyway, it was, and I responded to the picture. I said, "This is what our family looks like the day after church camp," because it was just everybody was out. It was great. But it's good to be back. It's good to be home. It's good to be back in where we are been placed, right? And we gather here today together because we are here for God. You know, we forget sometimes that the whole idea of worship is that we gather here for God. Even though we do get somewhat of a benefit from being with one another, we are here for Him. We're here to acknowledge Him, to worship Him, to listen to Him, to offer sacrifice to Him. It's about Him when we gather. And yeah, in the overflow, He's so good that we get a lot of residual. But it's about Him. So we are jumping back in again today. We're in Joel chapter 2. And Dusty shared with you some things I got here for the end of it last week. But I want to return back to, for just a second, the passage in Joel where it says that God will pour out His Spirit upon all people. It says it doesn't matter if you're old or you're young, that's His plan and His purpose. And He does that in the days. And whenever Joel was prophesying, it was something that was yet to come. And then I'm sure that Dusty talked with you somewhat about the fact that to a certain degree, that has been fulfilled. When was that fulfilled? Okay. When did God pour out His Spirit upon His people? Okay. We know it was fulfilled in power at Pentecost. And if you want to, you could also say that in Acts chapter 10, we got the Gentile Pentecost. Whenever Peter went and preached to the Gentiles in Acts chapter 10, and it happened again. And it was a punctuation mark that it was not just going to happen for the people of Israel. It was going to happen to anybody who would turn to the Lord. Now, that is a fulfillment. But we've talked about how prophecy often has more than one fulfillment. Do you realize that we are also in that same direction, that same vein? We are looking forward to a time that will precede when Jesus comes back, when there will be a battle between the forces of evil, spiritual forces of evil, the literal outcroppings of evil in our world, and the people of God, and the kingdom of God, and the Spirit of God, and there will be a clash. And in that day, when spiritual evil will have its outcropping in the world, there will also be an outcropping of the poured out Spirit of God that will be greater. Read Revelation. It's there. Go find it. Do a little work on your own. You'll see that it's there. So it's not just things get awful, 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 and there's tribulation and there's bad stuff and, oh, everybody run and hide. There's going to be an outpouring of the Spirit of God that will also be a great fulfillment, another fulfillment of this passage. Are you with me on this? Because that is the way God works. So, on the heels of that passage, and God declaring that He will do that, we look at where we're going today. It's very simple. He says, "And everyone who calls on the name of the Lord will be saved." That sounds good, doesn't it? Now, what questions would you have about that? Everyone who calls on the name of the Lord will be saved. What did it mean then? in that day, because he's described all these manifestations of things that he's going to repeat in just a second, that are going to happen in the day of the Lord. Okay? And in that day, everyone who calls on the name of the Lord will be saved. Now, this is the prophet Joel. All these prophets were very centered on God's relationship with his people. Whenever he uses that word, everyone, do you think he meant everyone, or did he mean everyone who was a Jew? I don't know. We've got to ask the question. Okay? Now, the reality is, sometimes, did we not say that the prophets spoke better than they understood? Even if Joel may have meant everyone only, the Jews, that word is everyone. And he was speaking as if through a smoky glass, and he didn't see it all. Is this making sense? There's not some special word for that, you know, that might mean one thing in one situation and another. That's not the issue. The issue is when Joel spoke and said, everyone that calls upon the name of the Lord in that day will be saved. Even though he was talking about a time that we know now has been fulfilled, we know that that prophecy seems to also have a future fulfillment for us, and has, in a sense, already been fulfilled, because do we not know and do we not preach that everyone who calls upon the name of the Lord will be saved? Now, that word saved, though, in that context meant saved from enemies, right? Those who were attacking. Okay, this whole situation is couched in the language of war, and we're going to see that in just a second, a little bit more. But it wasn't just the way that it was fulfilled, and it is being fulfilled today in the day that we live in. It's not just a literal war. That whole idea of salvation, being saved, when we look at it, it means so much more, does it not? And Jesus is the one who interpreted that for us. He's the one who said, God's salvation is more than just a deliverance from the bad guys. It's a deliverance from evil. It's a deliverance from sin. It's a deliverance from the condition that we are in. That, if you look in Scripture from the beginning to the end, is described for us, the whole story of how we got to where we are. And that He came to rescue us, to save us from our sins, from ourselves, from the world system He came to save. For on Mount Zion and in Jerusalem, there will be deliverance. Is there still a significance to Mount Zion and Jerusalem for you and me? Well, not in place, but in cooperation with. We are one people. You know, Dusty has talked to us continuously about the fact that the world increasingly sees no difference between people who are believers and those who are Jews. That we're both pests in the eye of the world because we happen to have a belief in a real living God, and the world doesn't like that because we're just in the way. We have morality that is a concern for us. The world does not. So there is still for us a significance, the fact that Jesus was a Jew, a Jewish carpenter. That he was born right outside Jerusalem in Bethlehem. That most of his significant ministry showing up took place in Jerusalem, and it wasn't very happy, was it? There's a both and. Where is Jesus supposed to, when he physically returns, where is he supposed to physically return to? Okay, Mount of Olives, right? Where he left from is where he's supposed to return to. No, Mount Zion, we're going to see it in just a second. Okay, I'll give you a picture so you can get the idea. It isn't that far away, but it's not the same. Okay. Okay. There will be deliverance, as the Lord has said. It's a promise, right? There will be. It's a hold on, it's not here yet, it's a coming. There will be deliverance. Call on the name of the Lord, you will be saved. Among the survivors whom the Lord calls. Now, is that consistent with what we see in the New Testament? Things you see, words you see used. Among the survivors whom the Lord calls. What are the Jews that survive after the Exodus? Not Exodus, what am I thinking? What's the word? Diaspora. Exile, thank you. My brain just went left turn and didn't come back. Okay, the exile. Okay, the Jews after the exile. What do all the prophets call the group of people that actually get to return back to land? Calls them what? The remnant. Okay, we use that word with carpet. Okay, God uses it with His people. Okay, the survivors. Survivors. Who are the survivors? The remnant. Okay? Those that are still remaining. Whom the Lord calls. Whom the Lord calls. How do we use that word in the New Testament? That last word. Is that a word we use in the New Testament? Call. Okay? Believers are called. What are we called to do? Called to be disciples. Be like Jesus. Pattern our lives after Jesus. Okay? What else? What are other ways we use that word? Okay? Called to be witnesses. Chosen. Okay? Many are called. Few are chosen. Now, I'm trying to get you to think of the ways that that word is used in the New Testament. Okay? Because God doesn't make mistakes about the words that He uses. And the words are connected. So what is this one verse, when we package it all together? How do we see this being fulfilled now, and how do we see it in the not yet? Let's take the now first. What are the parts of this that we see that are actually have been fulfilled before but are now being fulfilled too? Romans 10. Somebody open up Romans 10. Where is that, Dusty? Romans 10. All right, Dusty. You get to help us. 9 and 10? 13? All right, he says in 10:11, as the Scripture says, anyone who trusts in Him will never be put to shame. For there is no difference between Jew and Gentile. The same Lord is Lord of all and richly blesses all who call on Him. 13. For everyone who calls on the name of the Lord will be saved. And if you have an NIV, you'll notice that chapter 11 is all about the remnant of Israel. You see the headline there over chapter 11. Okay? Are we settled with that yet? Or do we need to talk more about it? So what would that be saying to you? How did you become a follower of Jesus Christ? Okay. Now, every one of us has a story. Now, if you're like me, you realize that every time you talk to somebody, you literally can tell your story from a different vantage point every time you tell it. It's not that there's different people, it's that there are so many things that God did in my life to bring me to the point where I was willing to allow Him to become the one in charge of my life, that I begin to realize God did a whole lot more than I did in this. And that He was pursuing me long before I ever gave in. And I was the one fighting against it most of the time. So God pursued and called each one of us. And then we finally gave in, if we are here in Him today. Now, I had to call out on the name of the Lord. And believe me, I did. I was a miserable rascal. But He was pursuing me, calling me long before I ever realized that I needed to call upon Him. Oh, yes. Yes, yes. The whole idea is that you and I call upon the name of the Lord and we are saved. Absolutely. Okay, good. Anything else? Was stated. Okay, we'll move on to the next passage. You'll notice the number one means that we are now in the uninspired chapter 3. Okay, not that chapter 3 is not uninspired, but the fact that there's a chapter has nothing to do with inspiration. Okay. Uh-huh. All right. Then Joel says, in those days and at that time, when I restore the fortunes of Judah and Jerusalem. Now, has that happened? Has God restored the fortunes of Judah and Jerusalem? In the 40s, brought them back to the land, gave them recognition as a nation, and there is a nation of Israel today that is flourishing, that has an established government, that holds sway in just about every country in the world, right? So, the fortunes of Judah and Jerusalem in those days, long after. Well, actually, Solomon's temple probably was not around. It was Herod's temple. Herod's after. So Solomon's temple. Okay, what's the timing? Do you remember the timing?
That's what I'm asking.
Okay. All right. The only temple that Joel would be aware of or have known of would be Solomon's temple. Although Solomon's temple may have been in somewhat disrepair or shambles at the time when he was prophesying. May have been in disrepair. Yeah, right now, I mean, yeah, at that point in time, that was not the case again.
Before it was destroyed.
No. No.
That fortune right there never occurred before.
Herod did rebuild the temple, and it was kind of, it was a trophy. How about that? It was a trophy of his doing. That makes sense. But there are other passages. If we wanted to go hunt that dog with that critter, we could go do that. But I don't think that's necessarily specified here. So in those days, at that time, when I restore the fortune. Is there a if about that? It's when I do, right? It's when I restore. When I do. And we all agree there is an element, a very strong element of, yes, this has happened. It has been fulfilled. To some degree. I will gather all nations and bring them down to the valley of Jehoshaphat. And there I will enter into judgment against them concerning my inheritance, my people Israel. For they scattered my people among the nations and divided up my land. Did that happen? Did that happen? Was Israel scattered? Were they mistreated? Has that happened on more than one occasion? And then he talks about how the people were treated. They cast lots for my people and traded boys for prostitutes. They sold girls for wine that they might drink. Not very good treatment, huh? Okay. I want to talk about a few things. Who was Jehoshaphat? Because it's the Valley of Jehoshaphat. Who was Jehoshaphat? Let's open up our Bible, 2 Chronicles chapter 20. Find out who Jehoshaphat was. 2 Chronicles chapter 20. I'll paraphrase by saying he was a king of Israel. I mean, a king of Judah, pardon me. Okay? And you remember, at this point, there was two kingdoms. Okay? Kingdom of Israel, kingdom of Judah. They were separate. Okay? It happened after Solomon. Things went south. Everything devolved in the upper, what we call upper kingdom, and the lower kingdom. Okay, Judah and Israel, two separate kingdoms at this point. And Jehoshaphat was the king of Judah. Okay, someone pick up with verse 7. All right, so you know who Jehoshaphat is now, right? And you know what happened in that valley. What happened? It's somewhat along the lines, if you want to do a parallel story, of what happened whenever God showed up and confused the armies, when Gideon was around, and you know, all of a sudden, boom, they hardly had to fight, right? God showed up. It was mass confusion amongst the enemies. What is it that the people of God did? All they did was sing, right? They sing, came down, and found... Okay, all that. Okay, so you see how all this is being orchestrated by God. Okay, it is this valley and this story that is very, very much on Joel's mind when he talks about what he is saying. Okay? Now let's do a little lesson that goes further. John, next slide. All right, you can see the little red blip there? Well, right, that little red blip is right beside Jerusalem, okay? What you have is you have Jerusalem, which is on a mountain, okay? Then you have the blip, which is the Valley of Jehoshaphat, which is also called the Kidron Valley. Then on the other side of that valley, you have what we talked about earlier, the Mount of Olives. John, next, let's give us a picture. Okay, here you have on this side right here on the left, that's the Temple Mount side. Then you have the valley, and what you can't see over here on the right yet, and you will in another picture in just a minute, is the Mount of Olives. Okay. Now, this description of what's going to take place in this valley is very similar to where and to what? Okay, Revelation, okay, and Megiddo and Armageddon. Now, it's not the same valley, but the description of what takes place in each is very, very similar. Does that make sense to you? The images are very much the same. In Revelation, what happens when all the armies come against the people of God? Is there a battle? Revelation says, who is it that fights those armies? It's the Lord that comes in and fights these battles, right? All these guys, all these people that come against the people of God. God takes care of it. Now, the people had to prepare. They had to be ready, people of God. But what happens is God comes in and fights. Look at some of the language. Okay, let's go back to the next. Okay. We're going to cover this. We may get to the next slide. I may have to come back to the video. Now, what have you against me, O Tyre and Sidon, and all you regions of Philistia? Okay, remember, everywhere around the people of Israel, where God had brought the people back into the land. They were peoples that had inhabited that land, but the way we look at land as flat, okay? But you have to understand that this part of the world is not flat. There are high places and there are low places. There are places in this geography that are down in valleys, and there's places in this geography that are on plateaus and that are high. And the reason why all the Philistines that were there, you know, who was it that fought the Philistines? David, okay? It was a battle between not flat and flat. It was a battle between high and low. Is this making any sense to you? That one people lived on the high places, the other lived on the low places. It's not like they were coming from a flat land army kind of thing. So the two could live around each other and not necessarily interact with each other unless they were at odds with one another. So whenever God's referring to Tyre, Sidon, and all these regions of Philistia, these are the people that were not eradicated when Israel came and got the land. Does this make sense? They were bastions of these peoples because it was high and low. It was separate. Does that make sense? And where God gave the people, they didn't wipe out all the Philistines. They still lived around them. And then in places like Tyre and Sidon, places that were sort of part of this people that Israel had come in and taken this land from. And he's saying to these people, are you repaying me for something that I have done? If you're paying me back, I will swiftly and speedily return to you, return on your own heads what you have done. For you took my silver and my gold and carried off my finest treasures to your temples. You sold the people of Judah and Jerusalem to the Greeks so that you might send them far away from their homeland. Question, had that happened yet? Was Joel prophesying something that would happen in the future, or was he talking about something that had already happened? Do you know? There are two nations, right? Israel and Judah. Which one of those two nations was first overrun and sent into exile? Do you remember? The northern Israel, okay? They were first taken off. Now, did they take everybody? No, they just took the strongest, the prettiest, the best, the smartest. And they carted them off to live in the land and be distributed and assimilated amongst the peoples who had conquered them. Jerusalem is a part of Judah. Jerusalem is the capital of Judah. Here it's a very literal, national, geographical context. In that's what Joel was prophesying. Okay, so he's saying these peoples had made a deal. These people, the Philistines and the people in Tyre and Sidon and all around, basically had said, hey, we can get rid of those folks if we agree with those people who are going to come and overrun Israel. We'll make a deal. We'll sell them out. And that's basically what those people did. They made an agreement with the aggressors to get rid of the people of God. That make sense? So God's not happy with those people who were in what was once called Philistia because they had sold out the people of God to those that would come against them and cart them off. Does that make sense? I don't know that I can speak to that. I know that what God is saying here through Joel is that these people in Philistia essentially sold out the people of God and made them to be overrun, destroyed, and then carted off and humiliated. God is not happy with anybody who would do that to His people. Wipe them out. Okay, we all kind of on the same page here. Now, the thing that I want to do more research on, and that you might be interested to do more research on, is this thing of you sold the people of Judah and Jerusalem to this path. Does anybody else's version say anything other than Greeks, or does it say Greeks? Anybody say Greeks? Because to me, that seems a tad out of place, because it was the Assyrians and Babylonians who came in and took over the people and ran them off into exile. Yes, yeah, this is before Alexander. Anyway, there's a thought there. Okay, that's something that I want to chase down. Maybe you chase that down too, because to me, that seemed just a tad something I didn't expect. I didn't expect that to be there. Okay, didn't expect the word Greeks. So maybe look. Let's look for that and see if we have an answer for next week. But we do know that the people were dispersed. Okay, and God's not happy with those who made that possible. So He says, "See, I am going to rouse them out of the places to which you have sold them, and I will return on your own heads what you have done. I will sell your sons and daughters to the people of Judah, and they will sell them to the Sabaeans, a nation far away. The Lord has spoken." So essentially, what you have done, I will do to you. Okay, I'm going to stop there. We'll watch my video at the beginning of our gathering next Sunday. The video gives you some pictures to help you contextualize what the Kidron Valley looks like now. And then we'll talk a little bit about what actually took place in those places and some of the things that Jesus said and did. And if you start to think about how we lose because we do not live in this part of the world, we do not grasp the importance of what was said and where it was said. To us, it's just words and they're just pictures. But to think of some of the things that Jesus said while He was literally standing on the precipice of this valley will just blow our minds. All right. So, we'll pause there. Time out. We'll pick.